Lots of businesses claim to be friendly to the environment. In fact, so many do now, a term has arisen to describe the practice of claiming to be sustainable while not actually delivering on the claim. The term is greenwashing. The outdoor outfitter Patagonia works hard to earn its reputation for being earth-friendly. We have a boss from the company to talk about all that. This year marks the release of a book by Patagonia's founder, Yvon Chouinard. He first published Let My People Go Surfing in 2005. We don't get Yvon, but we do get Rick Ridgway, who's the public engagement vice president at Patagonia, who's authored six books of his own. Rick Ridgway, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Yeah, Jeff, my pleasure. Nice to be here with you.
I understand Yvon meant the book as a manual for employees. What happened?
Well, it started out that way. It was meant to be, as you just said, an instruction manual internally for employees, where Yvon would explain the company's core values, the founding philosophies that he developed when he launched the company in the early 1970s. But then it grew out of that into something that we realized could communicate to a wider or external audience, the same ideas. And we realized that those ideas probably could provide value to, you know, not just other businesses, but everybody, you and me, citizens. So we published it. It's been really successful. And recently, Yvon rewrote it completely from the original edition that was launched over 10 years ago. And now the new one is out, and it's almost a new book, so much so we were thinking of changing the title, but everybody's grown accustomed to it, which has nothing to do with surfing, but everything to do with surfing. It kind of represents the company's human resources policy of letting everybody manage their own time. If the surf's up, well, as long as you don't let your colleagues down, you can drop what you're doing and go to the beach and go surfing.
I noticed you got Naomi Klein to write the foreword for this edition. She says, as a journalist, she does not endorse corporations. She is highly critical of greenwashing, but she certainly endorses this book. Let's talk about the efforts at Patagonia. It sounds like climate change has accelerated efforts that were already in place.
Well, it has. And it's, climate change is a symptom of the really root degradation of the of the Earth's environment. And at the end of the day, here at Patagonia, we believe that we're part of the problem, that by creating our own products, we're doing harm to the environment, even though we do everything we can to minimize the impact of everything we make. So we decided we would set up the business as an agent for environmental protection, in large part to kind of give back and do our own penance for the harm that we recognize we're doing. At the end of the day, it's a curious organization in that it's probably as close to a not-for-profit as a for-profit company could be. Yvon and his wife and their kids who own the company, they don't have a great need for a lot of money. They live simply. And so the money that the company creates in the main, it goes back to environmental protection.
I saw Yvon Chouinard described as a businessman who detests business. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, almost. He tells everybody that he didn't set out to be a businessman. That's the last thing he had in mind. He started out just making mountain climbing gear as a climber for himself and for his friends, making gear that wasn't available that he couldn't get. And that was very successful. He started then making clothes for climbers with the same commitment to quality and durability as the hardware, and then that really succeeded, and it kept growing and getting bigger, despite his disinterest in having a large global multinational. That's what he's ended up with, so he's a little conflicted about that, but that it is what it is, and I think his disinterest in actually owning a traditional global multinational is the reason that he's kept the company, because he and his wife Linda, they truly want to use it as a tool for environmental protection and also for increasing social justice for everybody in the company's value chain around the world. And that's what we do.
The environmental protection part of it is interesting, though, because it really gets back to the original gear itself. I mean, I understand that Yvon Chouinard was noticing that some of the damage that the climbing gear was causing in places like Yosemite.
Well, that is one of the origins of the company's commitment to environmental protection, and that goes way back to the 60s and early 70s, when the company was in the business mostly of making climbing hardware, including pitons that climbers drove into the cracks in the rock faces to protect their ascents, and then they had to take them back out. And with each placement and retrieval of a piton, it slowly damaged and widened and created actual holes in the cracks. And it was like driving holes into the cathedral of the your own personal church. It just didn't work. So he worked hard to develop an alternate technology of aluminum wedges in different shapes that climbers could just slot with their fingers into the cracks and then remove them, and they served to protect the climbers without really damaging the rock. And that was an enormous aha. The aha was that the company could develop a technology that was environmentally better and at the same time even do better for the business, so that they weren't mutually exclusive. That was an enormous awakening here. Then the second thing that happened at about the same time was right here where our headquarters are located in Ventura, just south of Santa Barbara on the California coast. The city council decided to develop the river mouth just two blocks from our corporate headquarters, and we located here in the first place because there was this great surfing break, and this development was going to ruin the surfing break. And we sort of wrote it off. We didn't think there was any chance we could stop the momentum of the city, who seemed completely committed to this project, until one single young man went to the council meeting, a local biologist, and stood up in front of everybody and showed everybody that the river wasn't dead, as the developers claimed, but it was alive with all this wildlife. And he brought the house down, and he actually stopped the development. And that was the beginning of our company's commitment to supporting environmental groups, especially groups that have a high component of volunteers and grassroots supporters. That's what we do. We, last year, supported with our grants over 800 environmental organizations around the world.
All right, let's talk about how when we come back. We're talking to Rick Ridgway, who's the Vice President of Public Engagement at Patagonia. Back with Rick and your phone calls and emails in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about environmental ethics, both on a global and a local scale, starting with the global scale. Patagonia is the company based in Ventura, California, that makes backpacks and sleeping bags and climbing gear and all kinds of stuff, and has still maintained its original ownership structure and is still devoting money back into environmental groups. You'll hear a bit more about how as we talk to Rick Ridgway, the Vice President of Public Engagement at Patagonia. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 to talk about Patagonia's work. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. I want to come back to one more story about Yvon Chouinard, the company's founder. A rugby shirt that he put on at one point to ease his climb so it didn't chafe his neck or something. How did that turn into the clothing line and all the other stuff that followed?
Well, Yvon was on a climbing outing, Jeff, in England, and noticed that local climbers there were using rugby shirts, and real rugby shirts made from, you know, really heavy cotton with hard rubber buttons, and they were terrific for climbing. You could hardly wear them out. So he started importing them, and they took off here in the country, and then he started making them himself, and that was one of the very earliest products that Patagonia, the apparel company, made back in the early 70s.
How did the name Patagonia come to be the company's moniker?
Well, in the late 60s, Yvon and his close friend, our dear colleague, Doug Tompkins, who unfortunately died with Yvon and me both in a boating accident just a few months ago, but Doug was the founder of the North Face. And he and Yvon went on a trip to southern South America in the late 60s to climb Fitzroy, the emblematic granite spire in the southern cone of South America. And it was a long trip, 6 months all told. They were on the mountain for about 2 months, holed up in an ice cave for 30 days. The whole thing was inspirational and transformational for Yvon, the most influential climbing experience he's had in his life. And when he came back from that trip and the clothing company started to grow and he needed a brand for it, he decided to call it after this place in the world that had so influenced him, that so represents for him the magic of the wild places on our planet that we still have left. And that's where the name came from, and it's And that's still what it represents.
Well, the kinds of things that you guys have done over the years, like spending 30 days holed up in an ice cave, I mean, you clearly know what it takes to survive in some fairly harsh environments. But the stuff that you need to protect you isn't necessarily always particularly environmentally friendly. So how early did that become an issue that you felt you had to resolve within Patagonia?
Oh, almost, almost from the beginning, Jeff. Our mission here at Patagonia is, the first two parts of it are to make the very best product we can. And the second part is to make it with no unnecessary harm. You know, the third part is then to use our success as a business to implement solutions to the environmental crisis. But going back to those first two parts, making the best product you can is absolutely fundamental to what we do here and how we do it. And out of best product comes things like durability. And durability of our gear is also the most important attribute of our stuff. It's what we strive for more than anything else. And we've discovered here, we've realized along the way, that the durability itself is an environmental component. Because if you have a jacket that lasts 5 years and 10 years and even 20 years, as our gear often does, then the environmental footprint of that jacket goes way down with each year, with each decade that you're using it. Now, we also ask our customers to, you know, not buy more jackets than they need. We ran a big ad a few years ago in the New York Times with a photograph of our best-selling jacket and the bold headline, "Don't buy this jacket." So, you know, those two things combined, you know, buying durable products, using them as long as you can, not buying more than you need, you know, that's our business model. And that way we feel like we're creating more solutions than we are problems by being in business.
Rick Ridgway is the Vice President of Public Engagement at Patagonia. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the ways in which the company promotes aid for the environment, not just promotes it, but lives it in ways that you'll hear more about in the next 15 minutes. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So in addition to trying to make things well, I mean, how deeply did the early Patagonia get into things like research and design and figuring out which products were more earth-friendly?
Well, that goes, way back to the company's origins in the 80s, late 70s and 80s, when we really started to discover the impacts, especially of our products, especially the ones that were made out of cotton. You know, back then we were making, like most companies did, our products out of traditionally grown cotton. And we really started to discover the impacts of traditionally grown cotton on the planet. And the more we got into it, the more we researched it, the more we realized that making these products, we were in the business of essentially what we concluded was doing evil. You know, it was evilly doing evil harm to the planet through the insecticides and pesticides and of traditionally grown cotton. So, you know, back by the mid-90s, early 90s, we made a commitment to start using increasing amounts of organic cotton in our apparel. And then by the late 90s, we committed to only using 100% organically grown cotton. And that was probably the most fundamental shift in our own commitment to making all of our gear, as our mission says, with no unnecessary harm.
And I noticed also the development of products like Cinchilla. What was that?
Well, Cinchilla was the moniker we applied to the synthetic fleece that we helped develop with some of our suppliers, also going back to the 80s and 90s. And more, we really worked with those companies to develop fleece that was made 100% from recycled plastic, polyester. In our case, it was water bottles. So we were like the first guys out there to really develop fibers made out of recycled water bottles and turn them into new jackets. So that was another commitment we made, you know, quite a while back, and we're still doing it today.
I can't believe the level of detail, though. I mean, the stories in the book, Let My People Go Surfing, about Yvon Chouinard and trying to figure out the ways in which the fibers are arranged, you know, whether they're scraped up or not, and therefore will actually absorb some water versus repel it. I mean, this is some serious, like, you know, microscope kind of discussions about how to make your products better.
Oh, yeah. No, we have a pretty big R&D lab here. You know, we're also different from our competitors in the apparel industry to the degree to which we develop our own fabrics. We have large teams here of researchers and fabric developers. We work with our suppliers to develop, you know, our own our own fabrics instead of just going to a clothing company in Asia someplace and buying off the shelf whatever they provide. You know, that gives us the best control over quality, and it also is the best way that we can add, in addition to quality, the lowest footprint of those fabrics and the materials that they're made out of.
All right, so you're clearly trying not to ship more than you have to. What about taking care of the people in the factories? Because certainly Apple takes a big dinging for all the great things it says about its own style, and yet it doesn't pay people terribly well in China, et cetera.
Yeah, well, we do our very, very best to make sure that the factories we do business with are treating their workers just as good as possible. We are early proponents of applying fair trade certification in addition to food. We now apply that to our supply chain and our workers in our factories, where we, through that program, create accounts for the workers. We provide extra money to them that they actually can use for whatever investments they want to make to improve their own lives in the factories. But that's just one of the ways, many ways that we strive to, create a supply chain for ourselves that provides the maximum benefit to workers' lives that are, devoted to making our gear. And, another side of that same conversation, Jeff, of that same coin is, our opposition to these trade treaties that many of our politicians are trying to continue to expand. We opposed GATT and NAFTA, way back. Pre-NAFTA, we sourced over half of our gear here in the United States. And after NAFTA, to remain competitive, we had to offshore a lot of our stuff, and we don't like doing that. We're opposed to TPP for many of the same reasons. We're even an outlier in our own trade organization in our opposition to that. But that's what we believe in, and we are firmly committed to our own beliefs here, as I think you know.
When you say you had to offshore the jobs, though, I mean, Patagonia is not a cheap product to begin with. Would it have cost you that much more per piece to keep factories in the United States?
It would have cost more, but, the biggest issue, and I know Apple faces the same issue, the biggest issue is this: as the factories in the U.S. Closed down post-NAFTA, the country also lost its expertise in making high-quality, high-performance textiles. And no matter how much we would have wanted to source here, there wasn't anybody making the kind of fabrics that we need to meet our own durability and performance requirements. And that, is actually more of a factor than just the price. So we're really hopeful that can reverse. We would like nothing more for that expertise to return here to this country.
Rick Ridgway is the Vice President of Public Engagement at Patagonia, which makes sleeping bags and backpacks and all sorts of gear for adventures outdoors. This is the year in which Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia's book, has been republished as Let My People Go Surfing, The Education of a Reluctant Businessman. You can talk to Rick Ridgway about the practices at Patagonia, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Jeff in Ashland. Welcome to The Exchange with Rick Ridgway.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Ridgway.
Hi, Jeff.
Patagonia makes great products, by the way. I have a couple of your garments that have lasted for 8 years, so that I really enjoy the company. My question for you is, it has to do with the fact that Patagonia is a benefit corporation, and this year Measure 97 in Oregon is about raising the corporate income tax, and one of the exceptions is if you're a benefit corporation, you don't have to pay the additional tax that you may have to if you're not a benefit corporation. Can you speak to that?
Well, yes, I would love to, Jeff. And I might start by explaining to listeners who aren't aware of what a B corporation is. A benefit corporation, shorthand B Corp, are companies structured in a way that provide returns and value not just to their shareholders, but what in business we call our stakeholders. So we're in business not just to enrichen the Chouinard family that owns our company. As I said before, they don't really value money that much. They don't really, they live simply. But rather, we use the business to provide value to stakeholders. That's to the environmental community, to, as I said before, the workers in our supply chain. So other companies are following the same model. They're rechartering themselves into benefit corporations to provide benefit to stakeholders, to communities, to their supply chains, to social justice issues around the world. And many states are recognizing B Corps and allowing companies, as they do here in our state of California, to recharter themselves, to actually change their articles of incorporation to formalize their commitment to providing value to stakeholders. That's what we did here at Patagonia. We were the first B Corp in the state, and now we're officially rechartered. It's in our structure to create, to grant 1% of our sales right off the top to the hundreds of environmental groups that we support around the world. It's in our charter to make absolutely the best products we can with no unnecessary harm to the environment or to societies. It's in our corporate charter to provide the very best child support and daycare we can to all of our employees. All those things are now formally memorialized into our articles of incorporation. So that's what B Corps are. The movement is taking off. It's just exploding around the world. And to the degree to which companies can be incentivized to adopt these greater values through things like tax incentives, we really applaud that effort.
You know, you can get killed in a competitive market, though, trying to be nice to people on the planet. And it seems like it came close a few times for Patagonia.
Well, we are a very financially successful company. We pride ourselves in that. We recognize that the only way we can really influence other businesses, the only way that, you know, we can hold up our own example to them in a way that they might be interested in is if we're also financially successful. As Yvonne, I overheard him tell somebody one time that, you know, it's okay to be eccentric as long as you're rich, because otherwise everybody just thinks you're crazy. So we're very successful. We did have a tough period in the early 90s when we grew too fast. We overextended ourselves, got into a cash flow issue. We had to actually lay off people. That was the hardest part of our own history. We vowed never to do that again, to actually try not to grow, which is difficult, but we grow just slowly and incrementally and very, very carefully. And the result is incredible financial strength here.
Which makes you attractive, I'm sure, to people who'd love to snap you up, give you a check, and send you off to the beach to spend the rest of your lives. But, and I imagine the offers have come, but you haven't taken them.
Oh, they've come. For 20, 30 years now, they've come. And they still are. We get calls all the time. And we just tell them, no, we're not interested. And Yvonne and his wife actually made an analysis many years ago of what they might do if they did sell a company and create a foundation and use that money to support environmental groups. And they came to the conclusion they'd actually better leverage the larger goals of environmental protection by keeping the company and continuing to develop it as an agent for environmental protection.
So instead of a separate foundation.
Yeah, it's, as I said, remember I said it's as close to a not-for-profit as a for-profit can probably be.
All right. So what are some of the places you've handed money out? And is it national groups? Is it local groups? What do you
Well, our ideal groups are smaller NGOs, preferably that have a component of volunteer supporters that are strategically focused on specific issues that are timelined that will create environmental protection in their regions or neighborhoods. And so last year, we made over 800 grants to nonprofits like that around the world that, you know, are fighting to protect their backyard rivers and wetlands and forests from development. We support other groups that are into environmental education. We support groups that are into sustainable agriculture production. And, you know, we are among the the biggest, at least by the number of grants we make, environmental supporting organization, including foundations in the United States.
It's a pretty fascinating history, and a book about it that will lead you down the trail of how Patagonia was founded. It has been re-released. That's a book by Patagonia founder Yvon Chouinard. The book is called Let My People Go Surfing, The Education of a Reluctant Businessman. Rick Ridgway has been our guest for this portion. He is the Vice President of Public Engagement at Patagonia. Rick, thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Jeff, it's been my great pleasure.
All right, take care.